You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Joe Thomas, NFL Network analyst, former Browns All-Pro offensive tackle, and future Hall of Famer joining us on the program. Can linemen get concussions? How often do you guys get concussions?
You don't get the big hit from like the side of the head, which a lot of times is where you get the concussion, or when you get tackled and your head kind of slams against the turf. So I think for the most part, offense and defensive linemen are less concussed overall than other positions. But I think what we get is those subconcussive blows, which are actually the ones that are more detrimental long-term. So when we were working with the NFLPA and talking about like, how do we reduce the amount of long-term brain injury that NFL players get? The number one thing that our doctors highlighted was those practice subconcussive hits that linemen are constantly banging into each other 20, 30, 40 times every single day. And so I think removing those is really the biggest thing. But as far as like big concussions, you don't see that as much as offensive and defensive linemen.
Do you know the protocol that you have an independent doctor who would have looked at Patrick Mahomes and determined whether he had a concussion or not? Who looks at Patrick Mahomes during the week? Is that the independent doctor or is it the Chiefs doctor?
There's an independent doctor who comes into the facility, and he is the one that is supposed to clear the player. Now, it's in Cleveland when I was there, it was the same guy from Cleveland that always came in, but he was separate from the team. So there was some, at least appearance of independence when it comes to clearing the player, as far as it wasn't directly a team paid doctor.
What did you take away from the Browns and Chiefs that game that if you had questions about, let's start with the Chiefs. Like, what's the one question or biggest question you have, assuming Mahomes is going to play this weekend?
Well, I think defensively, how are they going to be able to limit Josh Allen? Because I think Josh Allen has been playing really good. He's playing his best football right now in the playoffs. And the Chiefs defense has been okay. And I think the big question mark for that defense is, how good can they be in the red zone? Because the Bills are going to get into the red zone a lot. And if they're converting a lot of those red zone trips into touchdowns instead of field goals, I know that the Chiefs offense is fantastic, but they have a history of keeping games close. And a lot of times those sevens and threes in the red zone is the difference when the game is all said and done.
But explain that to me of how Kansas City keeps allowing teams to stay in games. They win these games, but you know, this is less than a touchdown difference in what their last eight wins.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the nature of their offense, right? They're a real high-flying offense, which means they can score really quickly. But it also means that teams are going to try to limit the number of possessions going back and forth because they don't want Patrick Mahomes to have the ball a ton. So they're going to play that kind of small ball. They're going to squeeze the football, try to limit the number of possessions back and forth. And that, a lot of times, has a way of keeping games close, especially on offense when you're a team like the Chiefs that you can be on the field and have a three and out in 15 or 20 seconds because you just throw.
Also, you know, you were there to be able to watch Patrick Mahomes. It looked like he was out on his feet. I don't know that injury, if it's a compressed nerve or neck injury. Like, how long does that linger, and could it linger longer than a concussion would?
Well, obviously, you have a lot of concerns when you're talking about nerves because you can go the entire spectrum from like something that lasts with you several years or something that's immediately better as soon as you get to the sideline. And I think once we heard that it was maybe some type of a compressed neck nerve issue, it made sense why he was having a hard time getting that foot under himself, because I was actually at the game. And so the play kind of happened nearly in front of me. And as soon as it happened, it looked like he'd kind of been knocked out like a boxer, where he was having a hard time getting to his feet. But then it kind of made a little bit more sense, because when you get some nerve issue in your leg, a lot of times it gives you what they call drop foot. You know, I've had some back injuries, lumbar spine issues, and that if you get that numbness in your leg, you can kind of get that drop foot, which makes it almost look like you're having a hard time climbing to your feet because it's a neurological thing. So, you know, hopefully for NFL fans, for Chiefs fans, this is a nerve thing that just takes care of itself really quickly, and it wasn't actually a big type concussion that's going to knock him out for any length of time.
He's Joe Thomas. He works for the NFL Network, used to be the Cleveland Browns all-pro offensive tackle. Should the Browns extend Baker Mayfield this offseason?
I think they should try for sure. Baker definitely proved himself that he can be and he should be the franchise quarterback for a long time in Cleveland. I think there's a lot of questions at the beginning of the season. His performance was up and down. It was streaky. It was a little bit of like what we saw in year two from Baker, but the way he played down the stretch, the way he was able to make great decisions, the way he really embraced the offense that Kevin Stefanski runs, which requires a lot of on the move bootlegs, rollout type throws that Baker Mayfield has been extremely accurate with. And I think he also showed that he is the type of guy that can be the leader of men. He can be the leader of this franchise and the face of the franchise for a long time. So, you know, the dollars and cents sometimes are a little bit tough to agree to when you're talking quarterback money, because certainly Baker's agent is going to ask for more than Patrick Mahomes got, because that's just the nature of the business, right? When you're a young franchise all-pro potential player, especially at the quarterback position, you're always going to try to reset the market. But there's going to be a lot of challenging issues with this contract, because obviously he hasn't had the success that Patrick Mahomes has had. And we're talking about a salary cap situation where the salary cap is going to shrink this offseason versus traditionally it's going up 2-4% every offseason. So it's easier to ask for more money than the last guy because of inflation.
Yeah, but Joe, I got to see another year. You know, I fell in love with Baker rookie year. Then he fell off second year. Stefanski did a wonderful job. I think they found their identity of who they are. I got to see, you know, he's a good quarterback, but make an all pro. I don't know. I gotta wait a little bit. There's no way I want to extend him this offseason. Unless I get a team friendly deal, then I would look at it. But I look at these teams like the Rams. If you gave them a do over. The Niners gave them a do-over. The Eagles, if I gave them a do-over. I can't rush into this here.
Yeah, the problem, though, when you're talking about the quarterback, the most important position in sports, it's not exactly easy to say and play hardball with somebody and say, ah, you know, we'll let you walk and we'll go find somebody else, because there's not a lot of somebody else's hiding behind rocks. And so I think the important thing is you engage him. You try to get a deal done, like you said, team-friendly. You know, that's still going to be an enormous amount of money. And, you know, I think Baker's the type of competitor that he wants to win. And so maybe he's okay not resetting the quarterback market, but just getting something towards the top.
But why does everybody have to get more, Joe? Nobody should make more than Patrick Mahomes in the NFL. No one.
Forever? Like, at some point, somebody's going to make more money than Patrick Mahomes.
Who is going to be more valuable than Patrick? That person's probably in high school right now. But nobody should be making more than Patrick Mahomes makes during this contract.
Well, the Patrick Mahomes signed a 10-year contract.
Yes.
So at some point, that contract is going to look like he was probably underpaid. And it's probably not too far down the line, because if he continues to play at an MVP level, taking his teams to Super Bowls.
Well, he's going to be underpaid, Joe. That contract is... We're going to go, man, they only have to pay him $50 million, but he's going to be underpaid. But there's only one Mahomes there. Dak Prescott is not Patrick Mahomes.
So I think the agent's always going to ask for the Patrick Mahomes plus a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
And then here's the thing, though. Like, as a quarterback, you have the leverage, because, like I said, there's less than 32 great quarterbacks that can lead a team to the playoffs and that can preserve the jobs of the coach and the general manager. And so those guys are always going to be so worried that, hey, if we don't get this player under contract, he's going to leave, and then we're going to be left holding the bag, and we're going to get fired in 2 years. And that's the nature of being a general manager and a head coach in this business, is that if you don't have a quarterback, you only have a couple years, and you're going to get fired, because the quarterback is so important to wins and losses in the NFL. Without it, you have no chance.
Yeah, I got to wait. I do. I'd rather run the risk, because I'm just not sure. As much as I love what they've done, like, is Odell Beckham going to be on the team next year? What role does that play in Baker's development? You got two running backs. Are you keeping two running backs there? You got a really good offensive line. I think the building blocks are there. I just, you know, I would say to Baker, let's go in with both, you know, looking at this as a bigger picture here, but we want to make sure that, you know, this is going to work out.
I think these are good problems, though. Like, if you're a Cleveland Browns fan and you're talking about, we got all these good young players that we want to sign, you're going, this is an okay situation
you're
to
right.
be in, because we haven't been here. But I think the risk, if you wait too long, you kind of see what happened in Dallas with Dak. But let's say Baker continues to improve at the trajectory that he's headed at. He may expect Patrick Mahomes' money, because if he goes and delivers the team to the playoffs next year and becomes, let's say, maybe not a first team all pro, but he's a Pro Bowler or maybe a second team all pro, then he deserves a Patrick Mahomes contract, because we're going to be a few years removed. We're going to assume the salary cap's going to bounce back up. And then as a team, you might be a lot more handcuffed. If you sign him right now, you might have the ability to structure the contract to be able to get all those other guys you've mentioned also under contract. The sooner you do those deals, history shows us, the better and the more likely it is to be able to get the rest of the good players that made your team what it was under contract.
All right. I think we're on the same page. I'm just a little more nervous here about jumping
I'm with you. I'm not saying that I feel as good as if I would have signed Patrick Mahomes to a long-term deal, but that's the nature of the business. There's risk and reward with every contract, especially at the quarterback position.
Have you ever gone to the line of scrimmage, as the Green Bay Packers offensive line does quite often, knowing that the guy behind you,
no, I've never had Aaron Rodgers behind
no,
me.
No, but the feeling, that feeling of, my God, I got so much confidence in these. Did you see the picture of Aaron where he goes to the line of scrimmage and he looks at the defense and all of a sudden he smiles, and this is the Lazard touchdown. He knows what's going to happen. He's smiling at the defense to say, really? That's what you're going to do? I have you ever blocked for somebody like, you know, that had that kind of... Okay.
No. I'll stop you right there and say no, but it reminds me of a Friday practice. And Friday practices in the NFL, they would call Fast Friday, right? Because every play is scripted for success. So your quarterback should complete 29 out of 30 passes on a Friday practice. And every time he goes up there, he knows exactly the look the defense is giving him, and he knows where the ball's going to go, and he knows it's going to be a touchdown. That is life as Aaron Rodgers.
Who's your pick in the AFC title game?
I like the Bills, actually. I'm nervous because I don't know, if Patrick Mahomes is going to be there. And then if he is going to be there, there's been some mention about a toe injury, nerve issue. There's a lot of question marks. Even if he is able to be there, how mobile is he going to be? And as everybody knows, like, his ability to escape pressure is a big part of why he is the most talented quarterback of this generation, because you can't blitz him, because he just escapes pressure and then he throws the ball 60 yards down the field to Tyreek Hill or 50 yards down the field to Travis Kelce. So with that mobility, it makes him almost impossible to defend. And if he doesn't have that, I think it kind of shifts the balance in the favor of the Bills, who are playing great football and are playing great defense right now.
What about the NFC title game?
Hard to pick against Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I know.
Well, usually it's hard to pick against Tom Brady.
I know, but it's really hard to pick against Aaron Rodgers right now, who's playing the best football of his career. He just seems to absolutely love the offense that Matt LaFleur has installed for him. And I know since the bye week with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Bruce Arians and Tom Brady have been on the same page. I mean, they're humming along right now, but I think that ends in Green Bay this weekend, because Aaron Rodgers in that offense, like you said, he's going to be at the line of scrimmage just chuckling to himself when he sees Tampa's defense.
Oh, my God. Although I like that Tampa defense. One more item. Players have to prepare to retire. And when you start thinking about retiring, then you should retire, as a former player once said to me. But I don't know what Drew Brees is thinking, because you go out like that where you played terribly. But if you win, you don't want to go out either, Joe. So it's sort of that taffy pull of, you know, like, what do you think will lead Drew Brees into that decision?
As a competitor, you always are convincing yourself that you're A, going to win, and B, you've got more in you. I mean, if you would have asked Jerry Rice last weekend, hey, are you ready to strap it up and go play it in the games this weekend? He'd be like, oh, I'm ready. I can do it, right? Because you convince yourself in your brain every single time you go to the line of scrimmage that you're better than the guy you're going against. And for Drew, like you mentioned, you'd hate to go out with that as your last performance. Brady's last pass in New England was an interception. And you hate to go out that way, but also when you win, you say, hey, I got more left in me. So there's really no time as a competitor that it's easy to say, yes, this is the right time. I mean, like,
yeah, but you were 33 when you retired, right?
I was, and it was an injury thing. I knew that I couldn't do it anymore because the injuries were piling up so significantly. As a quarterback, you feel like, oh, even though I don't have as much arm, I can just anticipate things better and my brain has overcome things. And so you always feel like you can still make those passes. Whereas a lineman, you know, when I'm getting steamrolled and I'm laying on my back and then I'm getting my knee injected every single week. It's a lot easier to step away from that than it is as a quarterback, just because you don't get those beatings during the week. And you always feel like in your head that there's some type of mental game that can help you overcome any limitations that your arm is facing.
Great stuff, Joe. Always great to catch up with you. We appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dan.
That's Joe Thomas, the NFL Network analyst, former Browns All-Pro offensive tackle. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. All right, here's some information I have on Tennessee Volunteers with Jeremy Pruitt got fired and Phil Fulmer, the athletic director. I said they were going to go after him as well from my source. He decided to retire, and whoever goes in has got some hurdles probably with the NCAA that they're going to have to navigate. The people who are going to make this pick, this choice for the next head coach, the Haslam brothers, Peyton Manning, is going to be involved in it, reportedly going to be involved in it. And I was told that, you know, there's a few things that are going on here. And I asked my source, I said, how did they get these assistant coaches on recruiting violations? And he said, well, they put money into McDonald's bags and gave them to the recruits when they came on campus. Some of the campus visits were not organized, or they were not above board, but they were handing out cash. I don't know if it was through the drive-through.
That's a Happy Meal.
So you literally had bagmen, and they put the cash in McDonald's bags and handed it to the recruits. My source said they were so in your face with this. They weren't even trying to hide it. And that's where my source said, Tennessee got sloppy, Georgia has gotten sloppy, but there's been no word on the NCAA looking at Georgia. But Tennessee, they got sloppy, and they were handing out cash in McDonald's bags. I haven't been to McDonald's in a long, long time. But
I used to get those little figurines. Definitely not cash.
Here's another possibility. Like, they're looking at names here. Who's going to take over the program? Who's going to go in there? And I was told Hugh Freeze is not getting the job. I was told Hugh Freeze might, this might be more of the SEC saying, I got to get it correct here. The SEC might be blocking the possibility of Hugh Freeze coaching Tennessee. So you would be discouraging Tennessee from hiring Hugh Freeze. He's already been in this before with Ole Miss, but he was at Liberty, and he's done a good job at Liberty, but I was told that Hugh Freeze was probably not going to be on the short list there. Here was a name that was brought to my attention by somebody else. How about Jason Witten? Just a what if Jason Witten as the next head coach. Throw that out there, whether it sticks or not. No idea, but that's the information that I have with the Tennessee Volunteers. Man, very, very happy meal. Yes, I'm loving it. That'd be, you know, you could do a get Tennessee football players. I'm loving it. Got their bag full of money there.
Well, yes. They deserve a break today.
Okay, I like that, Todd. Yes, Paulie.
Two-part question. If you were the president and the whoever is running athletics at Tennessee, would you offer Peyton Manning whatever he wants to be the new athletics director and oversee football operations? Both. Not coach, but Manning has a lot of stuff to do.
I would do it, but if I'm Peyton...
You would not consider.
No.
That's my second part. If you're Peyton, you have the keys to Tennessee athletics.
It's tough to go back to your alma mater. Like Patrick Ewing's at Georgetown. He is the singular face there, voice there in the history of that program with John Thompson. But if you start to struggle, like Chris Mullin at St. John, eventually, like, you don't want to fire a legend. And that's why, you know, if Peyton comes in and how involved and is this what you want to do? Like, he's been talking about maybe running a team or being a general manager of an NFL team. Yeah, McLevin.
So Jason Witten wasn't enough of a legend in college to have that same Clyde Drexler problem?
Like, no, no.
Okay, so he was like a lower key.
Yeah, but a former Tennessee Volunteer, And he might be one of those guys. You bring in integrity.
1 year and then take over from McCarthy in Dallas. He's a future Cowboys coach if I ever saw one.
Yeah.
Don't you think that makes sense someday?
I don't know. How about we let him ease into a job? It's just like Monday Night Football, Jason Witten. He wasn't ready to do it.
NFL commissioner.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's bring in Josh Norman, the Bills cornerback, the pride of Coastal Carolina, and he's partnered with the Boys and Girls Club of Crescent Region, South Carolina, doing some great things there. And it's a teen center that opens soon, provides a safe place for youth between the ages of 13 and 18 years of age, after school, during the summer. Wegmans just donated $135,000 to Josh's Buffalo Business Blitz, supporting small businesses. How's morale in Buffalo, Josh?
Tell you what, it's beyond crazy. I think, you know, these guys, if they could get a stadium, they would definitely come. but the 6,700 that was in there, I'm telling you, they sound like 60,000. So it was crazy.
Are you outside right now, the building?
Yeah, kind of outside. I came out here to get away for a second. But, yeah, everything so far has been great. It's just beautiful here. I mean, look at, we got snow and everything going on. So it's beautiful out here.
Wait, show me the parking lot. Who's got the best ride in the parking lot?
Well, honestly, you know, when you look at it, you got this hog right here. You know, it's
whose is that?
Pretty fancy, you know.
Is that yours?
It's mine.
Oh, that,
yes.
Oh, okay.
That's the only one that matters.
When did you know you guys had something special in Josh Allen? How long did it take, practice or games?
You know, when we first got here, all the way back in, you want to go to training camp, really Zoom calls before the training camp. And then, you know, going each and every day we got to training camp, playing with these guys and competing. I mean, talent was out of this world. I mean, we let go of some guys early on in training camp that, like, can play on anybody's roster. So we knew it was going to have a good ball club when that happened. And then we started getting to the games and we started to get our feet rolling. We was like, okay, we can do this thing. But we had a little spot there in the middle. And then we started rolling. We capped off one win after another win. And it's like, oh, we find our groove now. So once we got our groove, we were like, okay, let's get to the playoffs. And the playoffs came, and here we are. And it's like, man, we can do this thing. So we always believed, and we always had that notion of where we were going to be in when all of it, you know, the dust settled. But now to actually truly see it come to fruition, all our hard work and all our dedication that we put into it, you know, the feel and the craftsmanship that we was able to obtain with all the pieces. You know, we put this thing together. You got to give your hats and credit off to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott for making such a team, man, because they compiled a lot of guys from different places to come on and be a supporting cast to the guys that's already here.
What's it like when you're facing Mahomes and you know he's in a rhythm?
You know, when a guy like that is in a rhythm, it's kind of hard to – you know, game plan for it. It's kind of hard to get out there and stop him. But, you know, we got players, I feel like, on this team that is equipped for that and made for that and really for these tough times. They come through and they give us big plays game after game. Somebody is stepping up and making a play for us. And we was evident of that last week with Taron Johnson with that 101-yard interception return that was so big. It was like a backbreaker for them. So we're relying on, you know, our keys, our teammates to make more plays. I think when you play a guy like that, you can't really let him, you know, get you off track of what you do. You can't be so much concerned about what he does, but more so what you do and trying to maintain that at all times.
But are you more concerned about Tyreek Hill or Jason Kelce? Travis Kelce.
You respect the players, but you don't, you know, you don't fear them. I think there's a respect and admiration there for sure. But there's no fear. They have to play us too. And at the end of the day, we played them before. They know what we look like, and they know we know what they look like. So, hey, we're gonna play a ball game, And it's going to come down to, you know, who can last longest in those 60 minutes. And it's going to be a great, great game. I can't wait for it. We already excited. Shoot, I wish we could play tomorrow, actually, today. I'm anticipating that for sure.
He's Josh Norman. They play the Chiefs, the AFC Championship game. That'll be at 6:40 Eastern on CBS. When did you realize you were a meme when you got this stiff arm from Henry?
I don't know, man. Like, I don't pretty much concern myself with such things. It's a play. You know, I actually go out there.
Wait, Josh, you're in the AFC title game. I figured I could ask you, and you might have a little bit of fun that Derrick Henry tossed you to the sidelines.
I mean, listen here, man. When you're going after the ball, you're going to get tossed regardless. Like, it's just something that you have a knack for. For me, I don't look at it from a standpoint of what people say after the fact. I looked at if I'm going to actually make that play during the fact. And then coming back to plays later, we got off the field from plays that we made. So I don't get too much caught up into that, man. I don't. It's a laugh. It's a joke. I mean, we're in a society now. We like to see the oohs and the ahs and the glitz and the glams of the sport. And that's great. But when you're out there, the only thing you're thinking about is getting the opponent and getting the ball from him. So I can care less. It was something to laugh about. But now, you know, we're in the playoffs, heading to the AFC Championship. And he's not. So.
And Derrick Henry is not in the AFC title game. So
hey, man. Hey, look. Respect to the man. He has 2,000 yards rushing. Listen, that's hard to do for anybody. Only 8 people did it, and he did it. So, hey, hats off to him and everything they got going. So.
Hey, and congratulations what you're doing with the Boys and Girls Club of Crescent Region, South Carolina, and also what you're doing in Buffalo Business Blitz, supporting small businesses. So that's great. Yeah. Great things to be able to be a part of.
Oh, absolutely. We opened a teen center in Greenwood, South Carolina, Star Student Court Teen Center down there. And as you said, we partner with the Boys and Girls Club of America, and they go to the Crescent Region. And they actually helping us open up Teen Center here in February when all this is said and done. And so when that happened, that's one of my biggest things that I really wanted for myself in this tenure of me being here in the league, is just open up a Teen Center for the kids out there in the area. They needed the most. And so the Buffalo Business Blitz that we have going on now is helping out the small businesses here in Buffalo who was shut down during the COVID times that we had during this offseason, during the seasons. And we was just trying to give a help and support to them. So this awesome. Is what we're doing out here.
Let's get Coastal Carolina versus Alabama, Josh.
Why not? I was talking to Levi Wallace about that in the locker room. Why not? I mean, hey. Let's clash the Titans. Let's see what happens. My money's on Coastal, so it is what it is.
Hey, great to talk to you as always. Have fun in Kansas City. We appreciate your time as always.
Well, I appreciate you guys. And thank you all for having me on, and we'll catch y'all again soon.
Thank you, bud. That's Josh Norman, the Bills cornerback. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Chris Webber, NBA on TNT analyst. He was on the call for the Bucks and the Nets last night on TNT. Next game, Lakers-Bucks Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern, also on TNT. Oh, look at you, Mr. Milwaukee Buck, with your Milwaukee Bucks T-shirt on. Did you pay for that?
No, I got so many. I can wear all the teams. I guess I was. I used to say I wasn't superstitious, but I would never wear other teams. Now, I take all the swag they give me. I work out in it. So,
were the Pistons your favorite team growing up?
Yeah, by far. It was the Pistons, and then it was the Pistons and the Lakers, Magic being from Michigan, and then I hated Chicago and the Celtics so much, but I really loved secretly. So it was the tangle web back then.
Well, why did you hate Boston?
Well, remember, you know, back then you had to go through certain teams. So back then the Pistons had to go through Boston. So, you know, I grew up hating Dick Stockton because every time his voice came on, it reminded me of the Celtics games. You know, you think the commentators have something to do with the game. And so remember Isaiah turning it over? That's a crazy story. Well, we got whoopings that night because we went crazy running through the house when Isaiah turned it over. And then we beat the Celtics, got through them. You know, that's when you see Kevin McHale giving Isaiah the pound, telling him, you better go win it, you better go win it. Isaiah hurts himself and gets 44 in the finals. We lose to the Lakers. Good job, Magic. And then we beat them next two. So I hated the Celtics because we had to go through them. And, of course, just the Bulls just because.
Okay, but what was that like when you're watching Isaiah throw the ball in? Just get the ball in and you're going to beat the Celtics. And Larry Bird, slowest guy on the floor, comes out of nowhere and steals the ball, hits DJ for the layup.
It was crazy. When I played the Celtics the first time, I remember having like Spree and those guys pick me up. And seriously, like, I know Kyrie takes the sage and does that around, but I really thought it had to be like a leprechaun on top of those rims. I really thought back then it was something with the parquet floor that it was magic. And so I just felt like, wow, come on, out of all, you know, the times that this could happen. So that was one of the worst moments for me as a basketball fan.
Were you a Lions fan too growing up?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I remember going to a friend's wedding and all these Lions, you know, were there. And so, yeah, it was I was a big Lions fan, still am, you know, Billy Sims and, you know, other players that we've had during that time, even though we're most famously known for being the only team where two Hall of Famers, generational talents retired early rather than what they left.
Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, they decided, yeah. You know what, I'd rather not play. Instead of playing with the Lions, I'd rather not play at all.
Yeah. But you know what, I'll be quick, but I'm a Lions fan still to this day. But in 99, I think it was the year Cleveland got their team back.
Yeah.
I was just mad at the Lions. I don't know if we had gone on 16 then or whatever, but I'm just a frustrated fan. I think they take our love for granted. But anyway, I became a Cleveland Browns fan that day as my second team because I couldn't just jump on a bandwagon. So it's fun watching them do it, you know, what they did this year.
He's C-Webb, and he was on the call with the Bucks and Nets last night. What are the Nets doing so far without Kyrie, with James and KD that surprised you?
Nothing surprised me with this team, Dan. You know, I think 50 things can be true at one time. You know, Harden left unceremoniously. He got he gained weight. He did all those things, but he's still one of the best players. And I still believe D'Antoni is responsible for how Harden played there. D'Antoni told me personally that he believed that, remember how you would throw the ball in the Shaq would wait and throw it back out, and maybe that play took 15 seconds? He believed that Harden was doing that from the top of the key as a post-up player, and that, okay, Dan, if you're ready to shoot, okay, we'll throw it back. Now I'm going to dribble and find one of you. That's what he believed was his post play. I don't believe Harden, I believe he liked playing like that, but he can play so much more efficiently. And by those guys being friends, I put a lot of it on mentality. But by those guys being friends, I expect them to share the ball. And I believe Harden knows that Durant is the best player in the NBA. And, you know, he defers at times. So,
do you think Durant's the best player in the NBA?
I think he's the best. He'd have to be top two. You know, I know that offensively that it's no one in the game like him, that maybe that we've ever seen. And I think his teammates know that. I think that Durant learned how to play a different style, playing for Coach Kerr and with those players. I think he learned to trust players playing at Golden State, meaning like if you're in the right place, just make the right play, because he just plays so much more calm and effortlessly, and so he lets the game come to him. So and Nash is their coach. You know, I said this last night. You know, Dan, you may remember this, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in my opinion, and I believe this with all my heart, Nash dribbled the ball more than Harden. It was just the way that he did it. It was just he dribbled in a circle all the way around up under the basket, but he would just make great plays.
But so he shot less, though, Chris.
Yeah. He did, but I'm not talking about shooting. I'm talking about ball handling. And so I think that having a guy like Nash, because we used to want Nash to shoot more so that other guys wouldn't get involved. So Nash is brilliant. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that the game has changed, and Nash is part of the reason why Harden is successful. And by the way, D'Antoni is on that bench that coached Nash that way, and then vice versa. And so I believe that, you know, if this is their style of play, I believe Nash is a great guy to talk to Harden about how to do it.
Well, I think with Harden, we look at it as he just pounds the ball and then he's going to take his shot. Nash would dribble, and you're right, he was almost like Wayne Gretzky. Gretzky used to go behind the net, and then he would try to set up his teammates. Nash was a pass first, and James is a shoot first, shoot second, pass third. And I think people look at it and they don't like sort of, he's a ball hog. I don't think people looked at Nash as a ball hog as much as they do James. But I still say, why is it that Harden can get 11 assists, but Kyrie can't? Kyrie's not a great passer, Chris.
You know, when I played with Allen Iverson, a lot of people used to say that he was selfish. And he definitely is looking for his shot. That's the way Allen was made and programmed to be. Kyrie is so skilled at scoring and getting to where he wants. And his size, I think, when you trap, prohibits. Now, should he be a better passer? Should he get more assists? Yes, I agree with you. And I go back to Nash. It's not about, I don't want in any way want to make Nash seem selfish. He's one of the most selfless players ever. But when you have two guys on the side of you, you have to trust them. And I've seen Harden do that when he led their team in assists, when he was the third guy coming off with he and Westbrook. So I trust their relationship. And when you play with greats, you feel like, okay, I can get mine. What is the question? I do think it's Kyrie, and can he get others involved? But if you have Harden at the point guard, why can't Kyrie be the two offensively? Meaning, because I agree, Dan, he should get more assists. So I agree with you. But if he's not going to, why wouldn't you let them get that same amount and just do it from a two position and score and then keep the ball in Harden's hands?
Yeah, he's this enigma. He's a fascinating guy. And you were on the set with Uncle Drew, so you spent time with him. Like, do you understand? Do you know Kyrie Irving or feel like you do?
No, I don't know Kyrie. No, I don't know him. I don't know him at all. I know his father a little bit through friends of mine, like Rod Strickland and others. I know his father was a heck of a hooper and a great, great man. But I don't. And I think because I'm in the movie, people think that I can give insight. You know, I don't. This is a different generation. This is a different day. And so my thing is, you know, as a commentator, to hold him accountable and then to balance it with the things I don't know. And so that's why, like, so in my day, I can only say this, that in my day, if I would have played in Washington, I wanted to play with Sprewell. I wanted them to trade him for Calvert Chaney straight up. What's up, Calvert? I love you. but I played Spree, and at that time, I knew the Spree was intent on being Jordan. Defensively, I mean, this guy was incredible. He was a friend, but he was incredible. And I remember going, I want to play with him. And I know that if I were to play with him, I would have played better. Whether I had more shots or less shots, I know that, you know, whatever the situation, and no disrespect to Calvert, I just meant because of our relationship. I think friends hold each other to a higher standard, depending on what type of friends you have. I think Durant does that as the alpha male in this situation. And I believe that they had to talk to each other about it. And so if you, as friends, get in the room and you talk about it, make a commitment, say we're going to win, you know, make a toast, have a drunk talk, oh, buddy, we're going to do it. You got to stick to it. And no coaching can make you sacrifice, no friends, no family. It's the commitment you made to each other. And that's the only thing that I rely on. That's why I think KG worked when he got to Boston. That's why I think Rasheed worked when he got to Detroit. And many people didn't think it would, but they didn't know the personal relationships. And so, Dan, that's all I can put it on, because I don't know Kyrie at all.
Would you want to play with Kyrie?
Would I want to play? If I could play today and be healthy and go back in time and play today with who I was, I would want to play with him, because I was a pick and roll player. And as long as you give me the ball off the pick and roll, I could do, you know, whatever I need to do.
He now, might not give me the ball off the pick and roll.
Well, you know, we'd have to find out. But, so, very, very honest, if I could play today, you know, or if I could play in my lifetime, the three guys I would have wanted to play with are probably Magic, Nash, and LeBron. Because I was a big guy, and those guys find you.
No Jordan.
I would have loved, of course, I would have loved to play with Jordan. I just meant, you know, you're going to touch the ball a lot. With Jordan, I would have just been rebounding.
you would have been Horace Grant.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, Horace got some rings, so yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, you might have been Will Perdue. I don't know. But, you know, I was watching the Lakers last night. They're up 14 in the fourth quarter. Now, I know it's a game in January here, Chris. How do you blow a 14-point lead against Golden State at home?
Because Golden State has a chip on their shoulder. I think from Kerr enjoying coaching probably more than ever to Curry coming back. I mean, you see the shots that Curry wants. You know, guys, what I really love, the guys are really humble off the court, but their alter egos are on the court, and Curry is a little jerk on the court. He's the like 6th, 7th grade, and he used to play tag in all the games. The little fellas always won because you couldn't catch him and you were just mad. And that's Curry. He's shooting threes. He's getting other guys going. Draymond, I mean, it's a time for them to really show who they are in the midst of this. And so it didn't surprise me. It really didn't surprise me that Golden State did that. It would surprise me if other teams, but when you have Curry and those boys, man, you better bring your hard hat every night.
But could Curry act this way back when you played?
No. No. I just remember, you know, Karl Malone, I think 22 stitches to Isaiah. I just remember, you know, Oakley, other guys. It was just a different day. I mean, you know, I had to change the way I acted after, you know, 2 or 3 seasons because it's just not worth it. You know what I mean? You know, Cummings has nothing to lose. There's 2 years left in his career and he's on the bench. Why try to 3 seasons down the line? Well, I mean, why?
Wait, who do you still owe something to?
As far as what do you mean?
They did something to you, but you didn't want to lose game checks and get back at them. Do you have a grudge towards anybody?
No, I would say though that Terry Cummings is the one loss that I took. You know, I wanted to fight Xavier McDaniel. I wanted to, you know, back then it was WWF. You coming into the league, you know, and so no. But Terry Cummings, I would say, is the one guy.
But he's a minister, Chris.
Exactly. So how about this? You know, your grandfather, you ever see your grandfather get mad and give you that look and he doesn't say anything?
Yeah.
And you get more scared. That he's a minister and it's like, oh my God, he made a commitment to God. Whatever. That's he beat my ass right now. So no, that was my rookie year. He pulled me out the air gently, but he grabbed me and he wouldn't let me go. And he said, no, don't do that anymore. And Billy and those guys, they didn't come up. And like, you know, talk. They looked at him like, no, he's the crazy one. That's what I learned. Never fight a guy that cries before the fight. And then guys that are real calm like him, just leave him alone.
Wait, the guys who cry before the fight?
Oh, you never. Oh, damn. Never fight a guy that starts crying before a fight.
Wait, who started crying before a fight?
I've seen it before. I bet some people out there have seen it before. Call in, let Dan know. Like, didn't Lennox Lewis lose to a guy? Was that McCall crying before a fight? It was a professional fight.
Oliver McCall?
Yeah, he started crying. But yeah, I've seen bullies get knocked out, maybe 2 in my lifetime, when the guy getting bullied just started crying. That's when you just know he has nothing to lose. You don't want to fight a guy with nothing to lose.
but you know, like Charles Oakley wouldn't start crying before he would pummel somebody.
No, he might just start smacking himself.
Terry Cummings is a minister. That's what I find amazing, that he's supposed to be a God-fearing, peaceful man, Chris.
Yeah, I would tell his congregation to check his
stuff. You better behave. You better donate money. Put it in the collection plate there. Hey, great to catch up with you, as always. We appreciate you, your stories. And Chris will be on the Bucks-Lakers call Thursday night, 7:30 Eastern on TNT. C-Web, always great to catch up. Thank you very much.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.